keep up the social connecting. Keep up the social distancing. Good day, and welcome to Wheat Beats Word here on realagriculture.com for Wednesday, April the 29th. On this episode of The Word, staying social. Yes, we're going to start there. We have to keep doing that. Some really cool stories. Then, all done already? Unbelievable. Some crop updates. Then, terrible Timothy. Oh, it's a horrible grass. Some rotten rotations. And finish up at the end, I hope, with some strip till fertility. A really cool discussion. Let's go. So first off, keep up the social connecting. Just ever so cool. Kelsey called and chatted with me just to say hi after the agribusiness call this morning. And it's just so nice to hear from people that you don't normally hear from. That was awesome. I talked to the mayor of Middlesex. Many of you will know who I mean by the mayor of Middlesex. He had two calls from people that he just never hears from. And he got off the phone and Norma said, "What did they want?" And he said, just to talk. It's really nice. So keep up the social connecting. It's awesome. It's building our agricultural community. It is all good. In the meantime, please keep up the social distancing. Now, on the agribusiness call, one of the agbiz people said that he had growers wanting to jump into the vehicle with people who were there applying fertilizer. That is not allowed. It's just one of those things that we cannot do. Keep the social distancing. Keep the social connecting. We're getting through this. It's looking good. So let's just keep on that road. Okay, going to move on. And Ray, it was excellent to hear from you. Hadn't heard from you in quite a while. And Ray saying, "Hey, Peter, I had to tell somebody. And well, you seem like a good guy to tell. I am all done." Like, this is before Wednesday. I forget exactly when, but maybe on the weekend. Ray is saying, "I am all done planting everything except my soybeans." And it's incredible. How much different is it than last year when it was June before many of us started? Ray is already all done. Just cool stuff. The very earliest corn is almost emerging. It's just peaking. There are some soybeans that were planted back in March. Jim planted some in his garden, and I admit he's been covering them up at night just to be sure, but he planted them 2 inches deep. They will soon be emerging. Meanwhile, it is a little bit tough out there in terms of these temperature swings and these very, very cold temperatures. So the sugar beet crop, wow, talk about a crop that can handle cold temperatures. Get them in March because they'll handle those cold temperatures, and early seeding is everything. Virtually all of the March seeded sugar beets are going to have to be replanted because of these temperature swings. What's happened? Yeah, they got them in early. They got a little bit deeper than they normally would like, so maybe that's part of it. But they're getting warm temperatures, and they're starting. The cotyledons are opening up underground. Once that happens, it's like a soybean crop. If it opens its cotyledons up before it gets through the ground, it ain't making it. The sugar beets aren't making it. And so suddenly, even though they really handle cold temperatures well, we are going to have to replant them because it stayed cold, but you get the warm days. This all goes back as well to the depth of planting. Makes a little bit more sense when you see a crop like sugar beets that you have to replant just because of those wild swings in temperature. By the way, talking about that imbibitional chilling injury, Ryan out of Saskatchewan saying, "Okay, Peter, you're talking about this cold rain and temperatures and this chilling injury on the corn crop. Does that happen on crops like barley, like canola, like peas?" And the answer is, think about the temperature at which those crops grow. So corn is a base 10 crop. So it doesn't grow till it's 10 degrees Celsius. Soybeans are base 12.5. Well, we consider them more base 10, but they're really base 12.5. Wheat, barley, and oats, they're a base zero crop. Realistically, it's 1 or 2 Celsius that they grow at, but we call them a base zero crop. So they can imbibe cold water like crazy, and we don't get imbibitional chilling injury. That's why on the cereal crops, we can frost seed them. So no, we don't worry about that in barley crops, canola crops, not very much, in the pea crop, not at all, any of those really cold tolerant crops, because they grow at those colder temperatures, they can suck up that cold water and we don't see that same impact. Cool. So what else is going on out there? So from Kevin in Essex County, texts me pictures of these beautiful flowers out in his field. What are they? They're dandelions. Doggone it, the dandelions are flowering. So that's an immediate, should be a heads up for every grower listening saying, okay, so in Essex, dandelions are flowering. They're much tougher to kill once they start to flower. I know we haven't had a chance to do burn downs, but that tells you the stage of those winter annuals, those perennials. They're going to start to get big, start to bolt, and they get tougher to control. You got to up your level of glyphosate or whatever product you're using. You got to do a good job with coverage to get fleabane control with Aragon, all those things. But the other thing that Kevin sent along, these dandelions. So last year, tough year, planted his soybeans July. He sprayed the second pass of glyphosate in that particular field in early August. And he went around the outside of the field and said, there's no weeds here. I'm not spraying. Guess what? The outside round of the field is entirely clean of dandelions. He killed all the dandelions in August, and the soybean crop was good enough that it didn't allow more dandelion seedlings to start. Meanwhile, the whole rest of the field is full of dandelions. Kevin also said that where the dandelions were, the soybeans averaged 50 bushels per acre. Where the dandelions were not, they averaged 60 bushels per acre. And you just go, how could that even be possible? But it's the outside round. Normally, the outside round is not the best round of the field. You scratch your head and say, hokey, that makes such a difference. And so, by the way, in this whole wheat crop thing, and we can talk about wheat and weed control, and I know on the call this morning, lots of people are saying there's no weeds in the wheat crop, so why would we bother spraying the wheat crop under cool conditions? Well, wait a minute. If you have dandelions out there in that wheat crop and they're going to start flowering, you have to control them. And it's now that they make that yield impact. Just like Kevin's 10 bushels in soybeans, in wheat, we have seen a 22 bushel per acre yield hit from dandelion pressure out there in that wheat crop. I'm not worried about the ragweed or the lamb's quarters. Those annual weeds in winter wheat just simply don't matter. If you don't have any dandelions, any fleabane, any chickweed, any of those weeds, don't worry about it. Don't spray. If you have those weeds, now is the time. You got to get them out of that crop because they have such a big impact. Okay, one last quick note. We'll move on. Armyworm and cutworm moth catches very, very high down in Indiana. So that means we're going to have to watch here. If you're on a sandy soil, you're planting into some heavy weed pressure, watch out for black cutworm. In the gorgeous wheat crop that we have, we're going to have to scout for armyworm because they like that really good wheat crop. That's where they tend to lay their eggs. They go for the best fields. So watch that. The other one, and this is an oh my gosh, but stripe rust. So they are finding stripe rust already in Tennessee, also in Kansas, but Kansas far enough away, I'm not so worried about that. But Tennessee is not that far away from Ontario, and it moves up from down there. We start seeing these thunderstorm cells. We're going to have to start scouting for stripe rust in that wheat crop. Okay, another quick note, and this discussion on Twitter. So what about tank mixing or mixing together? 10-34-0, 28%, and also ammonium thiosulfate. How's that work? ATS, 10-34, and 28%. Can I do it? Does it work? Does mixing order matter? So there's a really great video from Mike Cobra on Sprayers 101, Mike Cobra, Jason DeVoe on tank mixing, and you should go there and watch it. Doing jar tests is simple, but one of the things they've really learned is that ammonium thiosulfate mixes the best if it's added in last. So it's like a surfactant. The Wales program kind of put it in the tank last. The other thing out of that Twitter discussion, you're going to tank mix ammonium thiosulfate with 28%, and if you even make it worse with the 10-34-0, you can mix it. It'll mix together, but the amount of time it stays in suspension, in solution, is limited. So you sort of have, 12 hours or less. Basic bottom line, add the ATS last. Some growers got away with adding it earlier. Okay, but why take the chance? Add the ATS last and agitate and get it sprayed. Don't leave it sit in the sprayer tank. That could be problematic. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about terrible Timothy. So just make me laugh. Man, I was going to talk about what a rotten grass Timothy is a couple of episodes ago. And I do the next episode. I don't get to Timothy. And the one thing that Lindsay Smith, our editor here at Real Ag, she works on the Word. She writes the post. The one thing she picked out of my whole episode, my whole update was, but Peter, you didn't talk about Timothy. Oh my gosh. Meanwhile, Paul also said, so I was on the edge of my seat waiting for why Timothy is terrible. So please tell me why this very popular grass is terrible. Well, it's simple. It simply does not regrow. It's the grass with the least regrowth. I am a production agronomist. I want production. And you're going to plant Timothy, and you're going to plant it with alfalfa. Well, guess what? The alfalfa needs to be cut early because that's when it's maximum quality. When does the Timothy need to be cut? Or we want to cut it? It's typically always in late June. The alfalfa needs cut late May to early June, so our timing is way off. And once you cut that stupid grass, it never regrows. You don't get a second cut out of it. Let's grow a decent grass that has some productivity, particularly in eastern Ontario where they're having issues with forage survival. I'll give Timothy that it is a pretty tough grass, but man, it's just not got the productivity there. If you're on a one-cut system, maybe it works. But if ever you get weevil in the alfalfa, then it's all bad. The alfalfa will have no leaves by the time you cut that Timothy. I'm going to be a production guy. I'm going to grow orchard grass or tall fescue or Italian ryegrass, something that gives me regrowth. In Europe, the entire forage industry is built around ryegrass because they can put nitrogen on and it grows and it regrows. And every time you cut it, it just comes roaring back. And the amount of production is phenomenal. And orchard grass here, when I was growing forage, I don't do that anymore. Orchard grass, everybody's going to say, oh, really? It's so tough to manage. It goes to head. It's like wood. So we have later maturing orchard grass now. They regrow. So you get grass in the second crop. You get grass in the third crop. I'm just not a Timothy guy. And I know all the hay people, all the horse people in particular, they love that Timothy hay. Well, if you don't want production, grow Timothy. Full stop. Okay, going to move on. I'm sure I'll get some feedback there, baby. Hey, one of the other things I was going to mention last week I didn't get to, sorghum. So if you're going to grow emergency forage, and the forage supplies are very, very tight, particularly in eastern Ontario, lots of discussion around what to do, how to fill in. Most alfalfa made it through the winter okay. Some of the new seedings, we got to reseed the hollows. Remember, alfalfa autotoxicity, it doesn't happen. If you seeded it last year, you can still go in those areas that winter killed. You can reseed those areas, and in some situations, you have to do that. But other people are looking rye. Cereal rye is a forage, and it can certainly work as well. By the way, Jeff, you asked about growing corn after cereal rye. We've been down that pathway. No, you just don't do it. It's all bad unless you're really into, you know, upper end management. You mentioned that you'd put some clover, you'd broadcast clover into your standing soybeans and didn't get any stand, but you're using boundary authority 100%. That's why you're not seeing the clover. So the herbicide you use in crop does matter, but rye as a forage works. Sorghum. So sorghum also is another, or sorghum sudan grass is another emergency forage that people will use. Particularly, sorghum loves high temperatures. One of the things that Francois Tardif told us in terms of that whole sorghum situation last week, sorghum is actually antagonistic to growing winter wheat. So Doug had a grower, grew sorghum as that emergency forage, got lots of cuts, sprayed it out last fall, about 6 inches high, planted wheat this spring. The wheat just looks like it's had horrible wet feet all year, all winter long. It's got no vigor. Nope. you won't get a good wheat crop after sorghum. So that's one of the things to tuck away back in your head. I did not know that. Next up here, rotten rotation. So one of the things that's happening out there is that in the north, we are switching from corn to spring cereals. That's a good thing because spring cereals, any cereal in the rotation, that is clear. It adds diversity to the rotation. It's a good thing. It builds soil health. It will give you the opportunity for a cover crop. Lots of good things. But I moved down into Lambton County and Essex and Kent and even into the Niagara Peninsula. And oh my gosh, we're oversupplied with corn. The ethanol guys aren't running at full capacity. Where is the market going to be? Just a whole lot of things look very unsure, and growers, particularly some growers I talked to, but one grower said, right now at today's prices, Peter, there is $100 per acre more in growing soybeans than there is in growing corn. I'm switching a whole lot of corn acres to soybeans. From Dr. Dave Hooker, Ridgetown Campus, University of Guelph. Alert, alert, alert. When you put more soybeans back in the rotation, it is all bad. They're bad for soil health. They're bad for the yields of the other crops. So really, think this through very carefully. I realize you have to stay in business, but from Dr. Hooker's data, between 7 and 9 bushels per acre less soybeans per acre when you grow soybeans on soybeans than when you are in a corn, soybean, wheat rotation. And I realize there's the wheat in there, but that's a big number. And you get less yield if you grow second year soybeans. That data is also pretty clear. So if you're comparing your average soybean yield and you're going to grow second year soybeans, you should really take 10%. So if your average soybean yield is 50 bushels per acre, you say second year soybeans, I'm only going to get 45 bushels per acre. Factor those things in. You also get less organic matter. You reduce soil health. It's early. Soil conditions are good. Corn loves that. Really think twice about whether or not you go to second year soybeans in that scenario. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit over time here. I want to talk about this fertilizer and strip till. So this question has been going around. How much nitrogen and potash, if I'm strip tilling this spring, how much nitrogen and potash can I actually put in the strip without getting seed burn? So great discussion with Greg Stewart. He's done a bunch of this work in his history. He's still working on it. And one of the things they really learned is that a strip tiller is not a strip tiller. There's all sorts of variations. So here's the deal. 1 year with a Dawn strip tiller, one pipe delivering fertilizer in front of the coulters and at a height, so we got some spread as the fertilizer fell. They were able to apply 100 pounds of actual nitrogen, 30 pounds of actual potash, saw no injury at all across a range of soil types and a range of different moisture conditions. The next year, they put tubes down, so they had the front tube running some, but they also had a tube going down behind each coulter. So now we're behind the coulters instead of in front of the coulters. Same rate, 100 pounds nitrogen, 30 pounds of potash. Saw tremendous injury at almost every strip till site they had. So when you look at how much can you put in there, if you got really good distribution and it's really well mixed, 6 inches wide by 3 inches deep, yeah, maybe you can go to 100 pounds of nitrogen and 30 pounds of potash or 125 pounds total. But boy, if you don't get a good mix and you've got a band in there of any nature and the planter moves over too close to that band because now you're not controlling how far away the band is, you can have big, big issues. All right, I've gone on way too long. That's it. That's all. On behalf of the team here at RealAgriculture.com, this is Wheat Pete with the Word for Wednesday, the 29th of April. Keep the questions coming, and I'll have to learn how to talk faster, which is exactly what I will do next Wednesday. Talk to you then.